the worst moments of our life.
Hey, girl, hey, that's bad.
So speaking of, like, worst ever experiences.
That is the worst ever.
I don't feel so good.
And that was my worst audition ever.
How bad can it be?
Yeah, and we feel the pain is best or funny.
Welcome
to Worst Ever Podcast.
Where that is not your host, Christine Lakin, but I am. Kallett.
No. I am your host, Christine Lakin.
I'm your host, Ala.
You're the co-host. Nope. You're the cohort, the minion,
again,
the sidekick.
Christine, you, without me, there is no you.
I don't know if that's actually really accurate.
Okay. Today we have a very special guest, an old dear friend of mine. She ain't old, but she's an old dear friend.
Thank you.
You're
for
welcome.
The correction.
She's gorgeous.
She's Thank gorgeous. You. She is. Chocolate.
You'd not be able to guess her age.
Where's this going?
She is urban. She is a singer, an actor, a performer of all sorts.
A fashionista.
She's a fashionista.
I'm looking at,
she is an inspirational speaker. She has multiple facets in her life. I've known her since you were what?
15?
Yeah. Her name is Rona Bennett. She's a former Mouseketeers, that's how I met her.
Yes.
And she's currently now, get this, in the girl group, the legendary group, En Vogue.
Never gonna get it, never gonna get
Come
it.
Come on now.
I had that first album. Can I just tell you, that was like the CD of my life. That was like a soundtrack. I loved every single song on that album. They really, like, that girl group, that sound, there was nothing like that.
Yeah, it was, that was
That's
also,
iconic.
Because we were teenagers, we were teenagers when it was out, right? And so the original group, I should say, it was during the Boys, like, before Boys to Men, but it was...
Probably, they were around the same time.
Around the same time. Yeah. So it was like, it was one of the first girl, or I should say female groups that... actually succeeded.
Oh yeah.
Because in the music business, it was, I know they tried launching many female artists.
They did.
As groups. And it just didn't click.
They really paved the way, I think, for Destiny's 100%. Child.
So now it's so interesting now that you're in this group, which we'll get to eventually of how that came about. Because I almost feel like you were meant to be in something like this, if that makes
you
sense.
You think so?
Yeah, I know that. I'll tell you why. But when we get to that,
I'm very interested to hear this.
When we get to that part of your life, but I want to start with the early days.
Okay.
Because obviously, if you don't know Rona, she is a musical talent. You got pipes.
Thank you, dear.
Mm-hmm. And she's very, 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 what's the word? She's, because you're
you
so
always have to brace yourself.
She's focused. I'm trying
to do she's, the pauses.
She's been focused since she was a teenager. She doesn't, she's never been that normal
tenacious.
Teenager. Yeah. She's,
I love that word.
She's like, she rehearses, she warms up, she auditions, she takes music. Vocal lessons.
She's opposite of you, meaning she's a professional.
Correct. That's
okay.
That's
right.
The word. Professional.
There we go. Professional.
It's not even
Got
in
it.
My vocabulary. That's
no.
What's so funny.
Mm-mm.
So you Hilarious. Started acting and singing at what age?
Singing came to me first at around 7 or 8.
Okay, and professionally?
Professionally, 12.
Doing?
The Goodman Theater in Chicago, Illinois. I got hired for a Christmas Carol.
Wow.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah.
Did you grow up in Chicago?
I did. I'm from Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah.
And were you singing at 7 or 8, like in just around the house?
Just around the house. I was in the basement of my parents' house. I was a very precocious, wild-eyed, kind of, you know, interesting kid. We had these wood panels in the basement that lined the walls. And so for me, I could self-entertain. And where someone would just see the wall, I saw an audience.
Oh,
people,
awesome.
You know, and that was my thing to do on a daily basis. And then I would go down and visit my maternal grandmother, and she used to take care of foster kids. And so I would assemble my cousins and the foster kids together to do a talent show for the end of the summer when our parents would come pick us up. So, yeah, it was in me pretty early.
And you knew You knew you were talented?
No. I just liked to do it.
Right.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what were you singing? Like, church songs?
Not really. I think I sang a lot of popular music. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was into what was on the radio.
That's awesome. And then, so you did that. So you did the Christmas Carol. Obviously, yes. It was a seasonal thing, right?
Yeah, that was the first thing that I did professionally. I was doing plays before that. I would perform at little venues around the city in Chicago. And then my first big break came from Oprah Winfrey when she did The Women of Brewster's Place. But it was a television series, not the miniseries.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Who did you play?
I was going for her niece.
Uh-huh.
And we went down to the screen test with another young lady, DeLeon Richards. Shout out to DeLeon. And she ended up picking DeLeon. And I remember that was the first major letdown that I felt in the business, because I really wanted it and I really thought I could have it. But that speaks to, you know how I'm always transitioning into mm-hmm. something inspirational. Mm-hmm. But that speaks to the law of attraction, because we both desired it so much. It's like the universe, God opened up and made space for both of us, because they called back maybe a week later and said, we created a role for Rona. And so I was her best friend.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So did
that
you
was
do the
really
whole
cool.
series?
I was a recurring.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And did you read for Oprah?
I did.
And what was she like? I mean, what age are you at this point?
I am 13.
So you're aware of who she is?
Absolutely.
Right.
She had the Oprah Winfrey Show at Harpo Studios.
Right.
Yeah.
So what was that like?
Nerve-wracking.
I bet.
Do you remember what you did?
We had to sing mm-hmm. and we had to act. So I don't remember what we had to sing, but we were classical artists. So I probably had to sing an aria.
Wow.
Back then, which is opera for right. people who right. might not know.
And that was something that you obviously had to go learn. That wasn't something you had
yes.
in your repertoire at that point.
Well, you know what? I had just as a, which I'm sure you'll talk about, Shadell was
oh,
my vocal teacher at the time.
We're going to get to that.
And Shadell used to train me with a classical background. So
oh,
I had
okay.
that foundation in me.
Oh, okay.
Coming
good.
Into that.
Yeah, and as most musicians should, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think everybody's story is different, and how we develop our instruments mm-hmm. is different. It's supposed to be different. I just ended up giving myself that, because I was in a gospel choir. Mm-hmm. I was in the Soul Children of Chicago. Shout out to my Soul Children. And I used to sing second soprano at the top of my lungs, and I would be hoarse after practically every concert.
Uh-huh.
It was very painful, and that's what pushed me into
you were
getting
singing
vocal
wrong.
Training. Yep.
Got it. And then, so you did, well.
He's laughing because he's like, you were singing
well,
wrong.
Well, because,
thank
well,
yeah.
let's
if
talk about gospel choirs. It's a lot, they sound amazing, mm-hmm. but they scream sing.
Well, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, I mean.
We can, yeah. And some people do it. Some people are built. I think their anatomy is built for that. It's just that some of us aren't.
Listen,
and we, you got to learn how to scream.
I was a choral person all my life growing up. It was like one of the outlets that my parents gave me because they worked such long hours. They made sure I was in activities after school so that they didn't have to like hire, you know.
A sitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're definitely a screamer.
Right. So shut up. So when I lived in Greensboro, North Carolina, my next door neighbors, the McKayherns, Dorian McKayhern and Natasha McKayhern, they were my best friends.
Shout out.
In Greensboro. And they would take me to their church with them. Now, remind you, I'm Muslim, but my parents didn't mind because we were friends. They were my next door neighbors. They trusted them and blah, blah, blah. So then I joined the gospel choir there.
Really?
Yes. And I was the only non-African American.
Okay.
But I'm not white, right? So I'm like, so I didn't, you know, but I was in it. Like, I still remember the songs.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, this is, I'm learning new things too.
Oh, God.
Over and over and over, he keeps on blessing me. Oh, yeah.
Thank you a lot.
Yeah, I remember the song still. Like, it's ingrained, because it was such an, I loved music so much, and so it didn't matter what, it was just a different, because I was in school choirs.
Yes.
But this was a whole nother world, and then I was like, wow, they really are passionate.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So it's an amazing experience.
I transgressed, but that's what I was trying to say. It's a very passionate type of singing, I should say.
Absolutely.
Not scream singing, but it is screaming and singing.
Thank you for clarification.
You got it. So then you finish Brewster's Place.
Yes.
And you go on to...
I did some industrial films and things around the city. I did voiceovers and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And then the Mouse Club.
You had an agent at the time?
I did.
Okay. So Mouse Club audition in Chicago?
Yep.
What did you sing?
I think I sang two songs. I sang Denise Williams. Gosh, is that Denise Williams? Let's Hear It for the Boy.
Let's Hear It for the Boy. That's one of my favorites. Footloose.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then I also sang One Moment in Time by Whitney Houston, probably.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one.
Woo. That's a range.
And you were how old when you auditioned? Yeah.
13, probably.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then.
It was right after.
So what seasons were you on Mouse Club?
Fourth season until the end.
Until the end.
Mm-hmm.
And you... The whole family picks up and moves?
No, just one at a time. Like, everybody kind of took turns. My mom was down there at one point, my dad, my grandmother, my sister even came and was my guardian at one point. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of, you know, we've talked to several Mouseketeers, and so many of them were not from Florida. You know, Dee Dee, her whole family moved out from San Diego.
Yeah.
Albert, I mean, his mom moved out from Chicago.
I mean, it's a huge, people don't realize the sacrifices that a whole family makes.
Yes.
For me, when I was a kid, it was so easy. I'm the only child. So my mom came with me. My dad went back and forth from work and was like, but my mom always said to me, you know, and I think she did this because, you know, guilt runs deep in our family, keeping you in line, keeping your head small. If you had a sibling, we wouldn't be doing this. Just letting you know.
Wow.
And it's probably true because I just don't think they would have felt it's hard. You know, it's a lot of sacrifice for everyone.
It is.
And then also there's a lot of a lot of people think because the parents are sort of, I don't want to say living off the child, but they're sacrificing financially to move over. So yeah, some of that money has to go towards the household in the sense of like, they're picking up they're leaving their, you know, these are adults that are leaving their jobs make sure that their child has a opportunity. So I don't know if they become the manager or whatever, but there's a piece of it that has to go to the family. It has to, because they're paying for
Well, sometimes people have two homes. They're getting the temporary home. And they
absolutely.
Still have the home.
No, it's definitely that
wherever.
Way. And then also, you also are just, at that time, I don't know how the shoot schedule was, but...
Pretty heavy.
Right.
Yeah.
But a lot of shows with kids, they shoot for 3 months and then they got to go back.
Yeah, know? it was interesting. So we kept extending. It would be 5 months, then 8 months in Orlando. It just depended.
Right.
You know, how long the seasons lasted.
So you arrived to Orlando.
Yeah.
Your first day. Tell me about it.
Blur. I have no idea. I don't even remember.
Were you there? So you were there with Dale.
I was.
Who were the new kids that came with you?
I hope I don't forget anybody. I'm sure I probably will. So, but Nita, Matt, Dale, JC, Carrie, Tony, Blaine.
Justin.
No, they came maybe after. A season or two seasons later. Oh,
Justin
like that.
And Justin, Christina, and
Brittany.
Brittany and Tate and TJ.
Ryan.
Yeah.
That was the next season.
They came in season 6, I think.
Right.
Something
you're
like that.
You're right.
Hey, y'all.
Those are the dogs.
Sorry. My husband came back home.
Damn it.
They're guard dogs. They're guarding you. They've been circling around Rona this whole time.
So did they do, because I talked to, like, Albert's season, they did not, because they were the first of that whole beginning of the new Mickey Mouse Club.
Yeah.
They were the originals. Mm-hmm. Had you seen the show before?
No.
So you weren't even a fan?
No.
You had no idea?
At all.
It was a job?
Yes.
Got it. No, because I know like the Carrie and the Tony and the Matt and those guys, they were fans.
Yeah, I had no clue. Because you had to order the Disney Channel back in the day.
Right.
So
right,
we weren't ordering the Disney Channel.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Go down to even 100. Play with your paneling.
Right.
Fine.
That's right. So it was, did you have to go through that whole camp thing?
Yeah, we did several auditions. And then there was the big audition here in Los Angeles. And then they flew everybody who made it to Orlando.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that they did a big audition. They did a separate audition here for network.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Did this vocal coach come with you that you speak
Chanel?
Of?
When did she? No, that no, was like Chanel. That was when I was older and I finally left the Mouse Club and I came out here to play with the big dogs.
Okay, well, we're gonna get to that too. She has an extensive career that a lot of people don't know about. Like, she's, first of all, Rona is probably one of the funniest people I know. She brings physical comedy back to the art of television, which doesn't exist anymore. I'm talking like Dick Van Dyke style.
Right, right.
Like, she can walk into a room in a scene and it's hilarious because she,
thank
it's,
you a
there's
lot.
Not, well, it's true.
I mean, so I give many props, people that can really
it's,
do that.
And
well.
It's natural. It's yeah. not like, it's not like she's forcing it.
Right.
It's, she naturally has this comic ability to, and I if you can, if you can find anything on YouTube with Rona, and we'll list some of the shows that she's done, you should look at it because you're going to be like, oh my God, I remember her. You know,
yeah, yeah.
She's cute. Definitely a presence when she enters a room.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, because you ain't going to get that many compliments.
I mean,
from me.
Dang, let me guess. Grab it up while I can.
Yeah, right. Thank God we're recording this.
Yeah. I would never say the same thing about Christine. Trust
never,
me.
Ever. No.
So then Mouse Club happens. Obviously, you're sort of growing. You're now becoming you're like going through puberty and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, things are happening. the hormones are racing.
They're doing things.
And you guys are on a really hard schedule. They don't realize what kind of schedule you guys had.
Yeah.
And Orlando, Florida is a right-to-work state, by the way. So there's not, the unions don't really exist there. So,
but I feel like we did have protection.
You did have protection,
yeah.
But it came late. It came your years.
At my time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because
yeah.
there was no protection in the beginning. Trust me. They were working, the shit out of the first crew. And you can ask any one of them. They were working crazy out. That's why the Albert, Damon, Chase, Dee Dee, Tiffany season.
Yeah.
They were notorious. They were. That's why you guys were groomed differently than they were, because they turn into monsters. Not in a bad. they were exhausted. They were working them to death.
Wow.
And
they were kids.
They were kids, yeah. And so they were rambunctious, and they were gonna. They were like losing it in the sense of like.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, it was crazy.
Wanting to rebel and yeah. like go.
There was
trouble
a point where. One of the producers thought I was their drug dealer, which, if you know me, I've never done a drug in my life.
Like,
I don't
run away yeah, every time like, you think there's pot yeah. in a brownie. Every time he comes over here, he's like, are these goldfish? Are these pot goldfish? What's that? No, they're not.
Like, I'm like, I don't want anything to do with it. So it was hilarious. Just ironic. But what it was they were feeding them so much sugar in craft service that they were like, I mean, they would steal the golf carts and go through the park and like just like, I mean, they were going, you can imagine Damon, Chase,
wow.
and Albert
oh,
together,
yeah, yeah.
right? So you guys had a different kind of environment. It was
definitely.
Very controlled.
Yeah.
You had school on set?
Yes. On location education. Shout out to Mr. Yerger and
okay.
everybody.
And then you had an acting coach.
We did. At Gary Spatz.
Gary Spatz, who used to be one of our coaches.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
yeah. He was the first, when I first came out here and took class at the Young Actor Space,
yeah.
he was running, like, I guess the mid-teen program or
yeah.
whatever.
Look at that.
So
I love it.
And I'd been coached by him before, too, because Tiffany Hale had introduced me to, and that's where I went to classes. That's how I met Christine.
That's how we met.
Love it.
It's our unfortunate connection.
It's the reason why we're here today. So then, so how many seasons did Mouse Club go? Eight?
Seven.
Seven. Mm-hmm. So you went from four to seven.
Yeah.
And then they took you guys and... made an album.
Yeah, MMC.
MMC.
Mm-hmm.
And you toured
yes,
with that.
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
That was fun, right?
Yeah.
You did Targets.
We did Targets all over America.
I know.
And we traveled abroad as well.
I saw you at
well.
The Target in Woodland Hills.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because Chase and I had just moved in that year. Moved to LA in 94.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was out here the next year.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So then... So then Mouse Club and all that ends.
Yes.
And you're like, I'm going
to... I knew I was going to California. I had to come play with the big dogs. I had to come get
and
in the big game.
And you came wanting to... What was your goal?
Get in the big game.
Act,
and
sing.
And act and
everything.
Sing and do everything that I've been doing pretty much my entire life.
And you were how old when that ended?
18.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Once the show ended, I was like, I'm out.
Well, and,
see ya.
But a lot of people moved.
Yeah.
Because it was me, Carrie... Tony.
Yep.
Dee Dee. Mylin.
Yep. I used to live with Dee Dee and Mylin.
Yeah, I did too at one point.
Is that why we were... I'm like, well, how did me and Alat started kicking it? We were like crazy.
Well, because I used to live with Dee Dee and Mylin until I found my apartment, which was a block away.
Okay.
And then you ended up moving across the street.
Yes, I did.
So I was, we were all in the same hood, right next to that KFC, which is now a Starbucks.
Yes,
which
sir.
Pissed me off. When I drove by the other day, I was like, oh, where's my KFC?
It's gone.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so and you've been in the same place. I mean, not the same apartment, but the same building.
I've moved four times on the same street.
That is crazy.
It's crazy.
Wow.
So you came, you got an agent out here.
I did.
And you started auditioning.
Yep.
And you were booking.
I was.
You worked with Jamie Foxx.
I have. And I did Living Single and The Martin Show and just all kinds of like guest star stuff. And then The Homeboys in Outer Space was a series regular.
Right. So it was Fox, right?
UPN.
Oh, UPN. That's right. So for those of you who don't remember, it's called Homeboys from Outer Space.
Or In Outer Space.
In Outer Space.
It was based on the sketch, right?
It was.
Wasn't it a sketch?
I think it was. It was
first
a sketch.
In Living Color?
It was a sketch in Living Color.
Was it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
big in Living Color.
It was.
Then.
You're right.
Okay.
So they developed a series,
right.
Which you played.
The computer.
Right.
The sassy computer.
And she's okay. Just a head.
Yes.
There's no body.
Just a,
she's
a
like
head.
A head. How did they do it? Green screen?
Yes.
Were you in a.
I would sit on, in front of a green screen, and I guess they put a tube around me. You know, like what looked uh-huh. like a tube.
Because your head would float.
Yeah, because I couldn't use my hands or anything right. like that. It was just
so
my
she was face acting,
it's
which
so
I don't
Pee-wee
know.
Pee Wee Herman.
She was, yeah. It was. What well, was? A, it was sort of like a spoof on. It was sort of like a. It was an urban Spaceballs.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Totally. Totally.
It was an urban. You know, and who else was?
Flex and Daryl. Oh God, he's gonna kill me. He did.
It's all right. Steven's looking things up.
I know. Oh my gosh, he did. What was the other show that the Cosbys had the spinoff show of?
Different World.
Different World.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh yes.
Daryl Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah. The he was
loved
the
that show too.
Who did he play in Different World? He was the
he was,
the dumb guy.
Ron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that show. So it was like it was your big. It was a. It was for
that was
LA.
My first series.
That was like
regular
your first
role,
series
so that was
regular.
Really cool.
And did it go a full season?
It went for like 22 shows or something.
That's great. Actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
In so, this day and age, things like go
gosh.
Like four or six.
Yeah, they're like, if
it's going
to have the.
I was going to say that they're finally starting to come back around
yeah.
situation comedies and stuff like
right.
that.
No,
right.
No, they're starting to do more multicams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is good. I mean, I think I liked the art of that kind of television.
When it's so much more economical to produce, you know, because you've got your sets and that's kind of.
Right.
You're not all over the place trying to get, you know.
It's
all these
stable.
Other shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were. Trying to put an album together at the same time?
Yes. I was so close to being signed to Death Row Records, which is so unorthodox for people to hear.
Right.
But I was 2 seconds from being like...
What was the pivotal moment where it didn't
contract.
Happen? And you're a stickler with that, too. That's.
But your girl found the loopholes in that.
Shadell.
Because supposedly the contracts were all done, and then we got to the last day, and some things changed. And it was like, wait a minute, and wait a minute, and wait a minute, and no.
Wow. Yeah, but
I'm going to give you an example of something real
yeah,
quick.
Yeah. Because
this is how I think, okay? My friend Jason Watkins was an original member of NSYNC. Okay?
Yes.
He was. This is in Orlando. He was singing in two different groups. One was NSYNC and one was another group. And I got a call from him in LA. And I knew Justin and I knew JC, obviously, from the Mouse Club. And I knew Joey Fatone from high school. So I knew most of the members. So I was like, he called me. He goes, I don't know what to do. I either have to sign this contract with this band called NSYNC or I have to sign this contract with this other group. And he was the bass in the group.
Yeah.
He was the Lance Bass.
Okay.
And so I said, he goes, but the contract with Lou Pearlman
yeah.
is really bad.
Oh, right. I remember this
and
whole
I said,
thing.
Jason, I'm just going to say this to you. I know those guys. they're amazing talents, and this group is going to go somewhere. Don't be stupid. Just sign the contract. Because I'm like, what else do you have? It's not like, you know, you're not, you know, at least they had a career already in television and were known.
Yeah.
Jason was right out of high school and had, you know, no one knew the hell who he was. I said, do yourself a favor. Sign the contract. He passed. He got replaced. That next year, everything popped.
Right, right.
And to this day, obviously.
I don't regret my decision.
I understand that. So no. I'm just curious, because you were 18.
Yeah.
So you were old enough to know.
Yeah.
Right. But.
You're still young, though.
You're still young.
Yeah.
But that opportunity of having that death row.
I don't regret my decision.
Because now the record business is totally different.
Yeah. And then I had a record deal after that.
With
Rodney Jerkins.
Oh, right.
You know, at a dark, I was the first lady of Dark Child, which was a subsidiary of Sony Records.
Dark Child.
Dark Child, baby.
Oh, Tony Braxton. He wasn't man enough for me. I love that song.
So, you know, I wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like I never saw.
So did you release anything or you just demoed? What'd you do?
I did. You know what? That was actually a very blessed time. I traveled to different parts of the world with my situation with Rodney. We just never made it back to America. Back in the day, you know, when
you go to Germany first.
Well, yeah, you go overseas, you build up the hype, and right. then you bring it back to America.
Right.
Right.
But that just didn't happen. Now, of course, I could say that, you know, there were some problems supposedly happening with the relationship with the smaller company and the big company. But at the end of the day, I always take responsibility for myself. And I just think it was some fear. I do.
With the responsibility.
I do. Yeah. He can't stand when I talk like this.
I know.
It's okay.
The inspirational shit. I'm like, all right, take it.
He doesn't want me to evolve.
Honey, you've evolved. You're done.
He doesn't want me to.
All right.
You know what I'm saying, people?
No, listen, I get it. But still, like, music is your passion.
Yeah, and I'm doing it.
Well, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
Okay, this is why we're going full circle, bro. Full circle. Family environment?
Yes.
Are they musical? Is the whole family? I mean, are you like...
Yeah, are you the enigma? Unicorn in the family?
Well, I'm the only one that's... I won't say I'm the only one. There's some younger, you know,
right.
cousins coming up now. But for a long time, I was the only one that was picking this as a profession. Yeah.
And supportive, I'm assuming.
Say it again.
Supportive.
Who, the family was? Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
And
very grateful for that.
Musically, what direction were you going?
At when?
Let's say right after Mouse Club, and when you first got to L.A.,
you know, I didn't have a specific musical direction. I just like to sing. And that's probably what one of my major issues was, is that everybody would be like, well, what do you do?
Right.
I'm like, I do everything.
I'll do whatever you put in front of me.
You know, yeah. I could sing jazz. I could sing classical music. I could sing R&B. I could do pop. So when someone would say, well, what is your thing? Because they always wanted you to categorize yourself.
Right.
I did not know how to do that.
Right. Do you think that could have changed the direction of what your career was musically?
Well, I just think that I wasn't that concrete in who I was as an artist to give that kind of direction to somebody. I just was more of a multifaceted singer. Do you know what I mean? Like, and especially at that time, people wanted like you to know what category you fit in. And I just didn't know that.
But let's take like Christina, for example.
Yeah.
Aguilera. Listen, we talked to Dale about it.
Mm-hmm.
The voice is insane.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, always.
Right. It's just insane.
It's always been insane.
I mean, yeah, even as a kid.
Yeah.
On Mouse Club, like you look at this knobby-kneed little girl mm-hmm. and that voice would come out of her mouth and you're like, what?
Incredible.
Yeah, it's insane. But she started because of, was it the Mulan?
It was Mulan because no one would hire her, remember?
Right.
She couldn't get signed because people would listen to her
and
they'd be like, oh my gosh, like she sounds like a black woman.
Yeah.
And then they would look at her and they couldn't figure out how to like package that. And people like were passing left and right. And Dale was like trying to help her at the time.
Yeah.
And then it was Mulan. Isn't that crazy?
Did Dale try to manage you too?
No. I don't know.
Okay. Good. He's multifaceted too.
I know.
But I mean, if you even think about Genie in a Bottle and like where she started, that clearly wasn't what
that wasn't
she
her
wanted
direction,
to sing.
Right.
That wasn't where it was.
Probably not. Maybe
stay.
I don't know.
No, no, because that sophomore album after was
that Stripped? Was that one?
I think that's the one with Beautiful. Is it?
Oh no, I thought that was later.
Oh,
but
maybe that
know.
Is later. No, you're right. But no, yeah, it's Stripped. Yes, that's when the whole boxing.
Yeah, that was when Matt got his hands in that one.
Oh, Matt wrote.
Yeah, Matt wrote a lot of songs. I think on Stripped.
So Matt was also a Mouseketeer. What's Matt's last name?
Matt Morris.
Matt Morris. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's a former Mouseketeer. His father's a famous
Gary Morris. Gary, a famous singer.
Singer.
Yeah.
Matt's voice is
awesome.
Out of this world. He's now producing and writing, right?
Yeah, he's been, over the years. I'm not sure what he's doing. I think he's more faith-based.
Yeah.
Now, yeah.
But he was working on Justin's album.
Yeah, he
bit.
Did a lot of writing.
Yeah, so he's, it would be great to see all you guys together. Maybe just do like an EP.
You know, you never know. I mean, it seems that one of the things I think it's really fascinating about the 90s Mouseketeers, if you will, is that we have found a way to stay connected and we're really proud of where we come from.
Yeah.
You know, we have supported each other. We're like a family. There's always in the club that Dale established. The fans are still so involved and so supportive. Like it's a phenomenon.
No, it's not only a phenomenon. Like we'll get reviews and emails saying, please bring more Mouseketeers.
Because this is such a huge part of people's childhood.
Absolutely.
I mean, they put the Disney Channel on the map. That's why you guys did so many seasons and so many episodes within a season.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it was their show. You guys, Kids Incorporated.
Yeah.
And I think there was one other one that they did that was...
I don't remember.
But it put the channel on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to the new Mickey Mouse Club in a second.
Yeah,
because what they're doing with it is interesting.
Yeah.
I sort of got a theory on that.
Okay.
Can we get to the... I want to talk about the singing, the vocal coach.
Yeah. Shadell?
Yeah.
We're going to get to that.
Well, let's talk. I don't want to know whatever this... Like, you keep making a face when you say her name. How did you meet her? How did she come into the world?
That was my vocal coach when I was having the difficulty.
In Chicago.
Okay. Yeah. And she taught me a lot of foundational stuff that helped me to improve as a singer.
But she became Rona's manager.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay.
In Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Did she move out here for you or was she already here?
I think she was already here.
Right.
Yeah.
So...
You love
face. I know.
Your face
well, because
is telling
Rona knows
a story.
How I feel about the Shadell.
Why do you feel this way?
I just never...
You didn't gel. You
no,
were oil
I thought
and water.
We got along. She was sweet. I knew in my head... I'm a little older than you, so... Not by much, girl.
Wouldn't know it.
You're old a lot.
All right. So anyways, I'm a little older than... I had been auditioning and doing stuff here in L.A. And I just... Something just didn't feel right. Like, I knew she was a vocal coach. And I bet she's an amazing vocal coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure she can get out of you what needs to happen and make it sound great. And you still stay... healthy and yada yada. As a manager, I was just like, you're in way over your head, lady.
Okay.
You didn't think she had the other side.
No. That was my opinion. I felt like she was steering Rona in a direction that wasn't necessarily Rona's direction.
Oh.
How's that for being diplomatic?
All right.
I mean, thank you.
But I liked her. We got along. Rona and I used to play jokes on Shadell.
What would you do?
So we would pretend. Oh, this is so funny. So one day I came up with this idea. First of all, we used to watch. What was the talk show that
Richard Bay? We used to watch all the talk shows.
We used to watch daytime talk shows, right? what was his name? Richard what?
Richard Bay. Do you guys remember Richard Bay?
I don't remember that at all.
It was Ricky Lake during that time and Maury Povich.
So wait, what was the saying that I used to yell out? Fuck.
Was it his saying?
It was a guest that was on there.
Oh Debbie. Debbie.
Oh, Dirty Debbie.
Dirty Debbie.
She goes, there was like these like trashy guests on. It was like the yeah. first Jerry Springer, yeah, well, okay. right?
Yeah.
So there were some trashy guests, and then the guest was like, "You calling me a hoe? You calling me a hoe, Debbie? You calling me a hoe, Debbie? Oh yeah? Well, you're dirty, Debbie." And we just started, we busted out laughing because we're like, "That's what she came back with, dirty Debbie."
That's so, why they call you Dirty Debbie.
So we, God. So for months we would just like if scream I called her on the other. Phone, I'd be like, "You calling me a hoe?" Right. So that's the kind of humor that we like. We were yeah. just, you know,
cray, cray.
Yeah. Yeah, we were a little nuts. So one time I said to Ron, I go, "Let's tell Shadell that I want to be a professional singer and that you think I'm like, there's something there."
Oh, God.
And
that, oh, God.
Right? So we used to do this like reunited version, you know, reunited and it feels so good. Yeah, yeah. So we used to do this like really, but I would do it like really, really off key on purpose so that, so, and but with
this. Just to watch her face.
But we would do it with a straight face, like literally straight. So Rona would like prep it and she'd be like, "Okay, so Shadell, Allah, he thinks, you know, and I'm thinking he has something," or, you know, so it prep it. And so she'd come over and she's like, "Okay, well, let's hear something." And I go, "Well, Rona, will you do the song with me?" And so we would go.
I don't remember how we did the song.
Well, at the end, it would end. Reunited. And straight face. And she would have her, I remember her, she had it like her purse and she just put it down. She's like, "Okay." And then we would just bust out laughing. She's like, "Y'all are kidding, right?" She's like, "Thank God." You know, she was like relieved. But like, that's the kind of stuff that we did.
Oh,
like,
that's so funny.
Yeah, so every time I hear the name Shadell, I always think of that moment.
I know.
Oh, we had some fun. Funny times.
We did.
It was rough during that time. We were really struggling.
We were.
You know?
It was fun.
It was like during the Thomas Guide time. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, so, yeah, okay.
The struggle was real. No,
like, you know, like,
you're trying to get around town.
You're trying to get to auditions, like no commercial auditions. Like, it's when Avail was really an Avail. You know, it wasn't like Avail, like maybe 30 other people were on Avail, but like you're like, it's a 50-50 chance, you know?
Right.
I
miss those days. Those days were really cool. Back in the 90s, when it was before the smartphones.
Right.
There was some crazy stuff going on that we can only remember.
We had pagers. You know?
Pagers were a service. And you would call in and you'd get your auditions and your appointments.
Right.
And then you'd map them out the night before and you'd Thomas Guide.
Come on, you would spell hello with your numbers.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. 134.
No, that was 1-4-3. I love you.
Yeah.
And hello was like 43770.
Yeah. It's like, were the days.
I just never so wanted then, the 911. So then I was in trouble. I was always
so
in
then,
trouble.
So then, Rona, then you did start doing a lot of live theater tours.
I did travel.
But you did. Now, this is a different kind for me, right? We're going to get into it. Like, I'm not holding back here. It's the Tyler Perry style tours, if that makes
kind of
sense.
Because but this was a new young man that was coming along, and so we did more dramatic. We were bringing in we were ushering in a new flavor and sophistication too,
right? So it was like shows like, and I'm making the title up, but like Mama Don't Let Jesus Interrupt, you know.
No.
You know, like,
that wasn't my play, y'all.
It was like give me some titles of the shows.
Well, my show was Men Cry in the Dark.
Okay.
Not as exciting as
And is there music involved?
Yes, we
so
did a lot of
like,
singing.
But it was a majority urban cast.
Yes.
Right? So just...
But they're live.
They're live shows, but it's like...
It's a musical.
They're musicals, and they were...
Reviews?
It was definitely
no,
a
it was
play
a story.
With music.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so...
Okay.
But imagine the audience. It's like church going. Like, they get dressed up, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You know. But it was definitely at the time that I was doing it, that's when they were ushering in this new kind of play. You know, it was expanding the audience that came.
Was this like was there like a faith undertone, or was there a moral undertone?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, this one was just like a straight based off of Michael Basedon's book.
Okay.
Men Cry.
What kind of was it? Original music?
Original music.
Was there a band, or is it?
There was a band and really stupid, talented people.
Right.
I was surrounded by incredible talent.
And how long did you do that?
The first one, 8 months.
And
on the road.
On the road. Wow.
And that was
so like, this is when things started changing, because it sort of took you out of the business.
It took, well, this was after my album did not do what we anticipated it would do. And this was a time in my life where I feel like that's where a shift happened.
Right.
In me. When you're trying to find out, okay, well, what am I doing now? Because I had big aspirations for that record, and it just did not happen the way we anticipated it would. I anticipated it would. And then coming back and just figuring out, okay, well, what's my next step? And then that was, you know, somebody saw me do the Jamie Foxx show, and they were like, yeah, invite the lady that did the Jamie Foxx show. And right. That's how I ended up getting the job.
You didn't audition?
Wow.
No.
Wow. But it still took you out of the business for like a good 8 months.
It took me on the road. Yeah. And then that just kind of shifted things. Like, I just started living a little bit different. Like, before that, I was like stupid disciplined, you know, like, you know how I used to roll.
Right.
So just relaxing my edges, you know, that's just when I started coming into when I started coming into myself as a different person, not different, but just different, you know, growing up.
Right.
Well, you were, it was
the first time I dealt with like major issues on a set. I never had issues, you know what I mean? Co-star issues, you know, just co-star issues.
And not getting along?
Yeah, or just people maybe not liking me because, not because I did something wrong to them.
Insecurities,
but just,
or maybe,
you know, I remember I didn't necessarily have the look that my co-star wanted for the role.
Oh, so this is a male co-star.
So that produced some interesting.
Got it. Was it a love interest on the show? In the show,
it wasn't my real love interest.
No, I know that, but like, you played that person's love interest. That's interesting. How does that make you feel?
It was very interesting.
How do you find that out?
You just know. It produced some issues, you know, but it was something that eventually, that life is so interesting. Eventually, you find out why things happen the way they happen, what's going on with people. That's why it's so important never to take things personally. But it definitely affected my, I just never dealt with anything like that. So you do reflect, you self-reflect, you know, and you wonder about your self-esteem, and you, you know, you deal with all of that.
Did you confront it?
Yeah. I ain't scared.
And what was the outcome?
The outcome is I was, you know, the professional that you know.
On stage.
Always shows up.
Right.
So it doesn't matter.
But when you left the stage.
When you leave, you deal with it. I just dealt with it on my own terms, but never did it affect what I do.
And was his reaction respectful in the sense that he was apologetic or understood? Or
years later.
Got it.
Wow.
That's
hard. And then you still had to continue on.
How far into it did you find this out?
Early.
So you continued on.
Mm-hmm.
And did the
producers... I never talk about this.
That's okay. Did the producers help in the situation? Or
not
they...
necessarily.
No.
But I was so... I'm such a workhorse and I'm so professional.
Right.
That... I would literally have to like stop doing what I'm supposed to be doing or be bad at what I'm doing. And I just, was not in me to do.
Right.
I'm just, you know.
Because I've heard of art, like, you know, I've heard of artists, right? Like, for instance, I have a friend who's a dancer who is working on a major artist tour. And she's a very pretty dancer and she's an amazing dancer. And she's very noticeable on stage. And that particular artist did not like her and treated her like shit. So they'd be dancing next to each other, blah, blah, blah. Or she'd be singing and then she'd be dancing next to her. And as she'd walk by, she'd go, get out of my fucking way, bitch. You know, shit like that.
Oh, wow. Jesus. Wow.
But my friend's a professional dancer.
Right.
And she's like, you know, but
does what she does.
Right.
Yeah.
But it made her life miserable during that tour. So it affects you outside.
Sure.
You know, you have to, it must have made going to work hard. Because especially for something that you love to do.
Yeah, it can make it difficult because, I mean, this is who you're working with every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to deal with that energy that's there, you know. But, you know, like that's the beauty of what I was developed into as a kid. You just almost become remote control. When you go to work, you handle it. You're on.
Right.
So that's not even something I had to think about. It's like I just, you know,
I'm clocked in.
That's okay in a normal job situation. And I'm going to tell you why. Because as an actor, mm-hmm. now you've got to, not only do you have to leave those feelings behind,
yeah.
but now you've got to show other feelings that right. say something totally different.
Right.
And to to get into that moment must be, that's a lot.
Yeah, we have to manage our emotional state.
Yes.
Yeah, emotionally, it's like, I can't imagine not getting along with someone that you have to be so intimate with, right?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had that kind of experience?
I'm trying to think, actually. I mean, I've definitely had experiences with co-stars that I didn't gel with, you know, or I found out things about them off, you know, off camera.
Yeah.
Certain beliefs they had, or maybe that I just, not my thing, not the way I view the world, wow, at all. And yeah. it taints that. And you have to really kind of separate who you are as a person right. and what you believe in off camera to who these two, you know, who these two characters are. And the fact that you are into this person, even though you think that person might be a total misogynist or a racist. That's hard.
Yeah.
That's really hard for me.
Yeah.
And how many people were in the cast?
I don't know. I don't remember. A lot.
But so are there sides? Do other cast members know?
I mean, it wasn't a secret.
Right. Are now other people treating you differently based
no,
on that?
Just no, I'd one. Had a great, you know, I mean, I had, it was definitely a challenging time. I'm not going to act like it was not challenging
right,
from different
course.
Spaces. but
that's the thing. I'd be the same way. You got to still go and do your mm-hmm. job and play nice and, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have to live with that person for the rest of your life, not in real
you don't.
Life. So
you don't.
That's the decision you get to make when you walk away.
Yeah. It can be tough to go through. I think in hindsight, of course, you learn so much.
Yeah.
About yourself, about other people, about life.
Especially being on tour. I've never done a tour like that.
You're in a bubble.
Yeah.
You know, so that's your little micro universe.
And you're by
that
yourself.
You're in every day.
And
you
is it a bus
friends,
tour?
Your family.
Mm-hmm.
So you're traveling with
traveling,
these
people. Traveling, hotels, you know, whatever.
And did you, okay, so then this all finished. Did you do another one after?
Yeah.
You did?
Mm-hmm. I didn't do
a
lot, right back to back, but I've done a few.
What made you say yes? After that experience.
Different experiences, different me growing, evolving and during that time. You know what I mean? Not staying the same. Also needing to work.
Right.
Hello.
And different cast, though, too.
Different cast.
Totally different experience.
You know?
But you must go in there with some reservations, I'm sure.
I don't like the first. Well, the odd thing is, I want to say, when I was 12, when I did that show in Chicago, the Christmas Carol, I had a nervous breakdown.
You did?
Pretty much.
Why? What happened?
12 years old, I'm in front of the theater, and my mom's dropping me off, and I'm in tears. And she's like, what's going on with you? What is wrong? And I'm crying almost inconsolably. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just sitting there and she's like, what is wrong? And I did not want to go to work. I guess I was just overworked or something.
Right.
Like I was doing school and then uh-huh. I had to come to rehearsal after that. Because it wasn't on location education where it's all working together.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I go to school and then I got to go learn some stuff in the theater. And
right.
theater, you know, that can take hours and practice. And
yes.
So I think I was just worn out and I never wanted to do another play ever. I didn't like theater after that.
Serious.
Like, did not. And then when that opportunity came up, it was like, well, what am I going to, you know, that was after the album, that was after this, or that. I was like, well, I guess I'll, I guess I'm gonna do theater. Again. Yeah, like I didn't even want to do it. And there I was in this, you know, interesting
Mama,
situation.
Mama, don't let Jesus interrupt.
You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
I love those shows. Have you ever been to any of those shows?
No.
You're from Atlanta. I don't know how that's possible. They do it in the Fox Theater alone.
Probably. Yeah, I don't know. We had season tickets to everything at the Fox, but we saw like Cats and Cabaret.
Oh, no.
This is like
Jesus, let the cats out.
You know what? Why?
Oh, man.
I'm just saying, that's what it's like.
That is not the play that
Jesus
I did.
Jesus, let the cats out.
I mean, that's the cats that we were talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
No, Allah.
Okay, so wait. Okay, then, so how many years of this bus tour?
Well, I did, I mean, I don't know. I did them off and on. I did some television appearances here and there. You know, at either given time, one or the other was my bread and butter, acting right. or singing. And then EV came up.
EV, for everyone that knows, is...
In Vogue, I'm sorry.
I like the way you said it, though. It's very insider.
Insider, I like it, too.
So I feel like a part of the EV.
Me, too.
Which, by the way, I saw them live in New York with Rona, and it's fun. We'll get to that. So EV, you say EV and Vogue came up. Like, how does that come up?
You know, Ricky... Luna,
another Mouseketeer,
who has been kicking butt.
What's he doing?
He's got Latin Grammys.
Where is he? Is he here?
I don't know if he's producing. The last time I heard, yeah, producing music.
Well, wow.
He's been killing it. He's produced stuff for the World Cup.
Yeah, you know, I went to high school. Ricky Luna's family is circus people.
That's a way to say it. I don't know.
Yeah, they're a famous family. They're a famous like trapeze.
Tightropes? Oh, trapeze?
Like or something like that.
Yeah. His entire, like, yeah, that's like the he, whole...
Yeah, I'm almost 100% sure.
You're telling me
sure.
something that I'm not very aware of.
Yeah, I'm almost sure.
Those circus films, acts are passed down.
Yeah.
I'm almost 100%.
No wonder he was so stupid talented, like, the way he could move.
Yeah, no, his family is, like, in that world. I don't know exactly what they're, like, what they do.
What the trick is?
Yeah, the tricks, but...
Fire eaters.
Yeah, but they're in that world. So, anyways... What was I saying? So Ricky Luna's doing more Latin stuff.
Yeah.
What if he did Luis Fonsi?
I don't know. But he's done a lot of
You know,
great
I went
stuff.
To high school with Luis Fonsi.
I'm not familiar with Luis Fonsi.
I wonder if he knows Alana's husband.
He's got to know Alana Ubach's husband for sure.
We went over, it's another friend of ours, and there's all these Grammys all over their house.
Then they probably do know
each
other.
What if it was Ricky Luna? We didn't even know it.
Probably. This is so dumb.
What were you saying about Ricky?
Ricky was probably a budding producer at this point.
Okay.
He was working with a gentleman in the Valley, and they needed someone to come and sing a demo. Mm-hmm. So he called me up. He was like, Ro, would you mind? Rona. Ro was came later. Mm-hmm. But I went by the studio and performed for them. And the guy who he was working with was like, I don't know if this is something you would be interested in, but En Vogue needs another singer, because he had just produced a song for them. And he was like, you know, would you mind, do you think you want to meet the producer? And I was like, okay. I never really thought I would ever be in a group situation. I always imagined.
That's interesting.
Right, doing the solo thing. Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So then Denzel Foster, one of the founders of En Vogue, I met him. And I showed him some of the stuff I'd written. I also played some of my album that I did with Rodney Jerkins. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, okay. So they flew me up to the Bay to meet Cindy and Terry. And it was... That was it.
Oh,
it
my just, so, gosh.
But En Vogue originally was a four-person group.
Yes.
And now it's three.
Yeah.
So what happens to that fourth harmony? That's what I was always curious about.
Well, you know, what's interesting is before I came on board, or just before they went into a trio, I mean, Maxine, Terry, and Cindy were a trio.
Right.
You know, for a good bit of time. Right. So it wasn't that people weren't used to hearing En Vogue as a trio. A lot of their stuff was, even though they had four voices, some of that stuff was octave.
Octaves, okay.
Okay.
You know, so you had the fullness, but it wasn't necessarily a fourth all the time.
I see.
So you could make it work with three.
So you go up there, did you sing for the girls?
No, I just played them my music and my writing, and you know, they heard my recordings and we talked and we just clicked.
So wow. There was no like, let's see if we sound good together?
No, it was like, I guess
they
it was fake.
They must know. But they also must know. They know what, you know, what the sound they're looking for.
And is Joe Mauvihill managing them at the time?
No.
No,
this
okay.
was, Joe didn't come on until later. Yeah.
So Joe Mauvihill is another person that I went to high school with okay. as well. So that's why it's so strange.
Good God, everyone came out of this Doc Brown High School.
No, Dr. Phillips High School, Orlando, Florida. Please check it out. So then when, how long, so do you move up to the Bay Area for a while to rehearse, or do they just send you music and you learn it? Like, how does that work?
I think I flew up there for some amount of time. I don't remember how long. I recorded the record Soul Flower because they were in the middle of doing that record. Another young lady was there, Amanda Cole, who ended up leaving. And then just after that, Cindy had to go on maternity leave.
Okay.
And so Maxine ended up coming back to the group in order to go on a tour with us in Europe. We did this thing called a Night of the Proms, which is like this mash of some of the top musicians from all over Europe that play classical music, and then they'll take rock and pop and bring them together. Like,
cool.
Yeah, really, really cool.
Wow.
And we did arenas over there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so huge and amazing. We did Germany and Holland.
I'm just curious about, because En Vogue is, like I said, it's a legendary group. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows the members, obviously, the original members.
Yes.
So how do they, like, introduce you, and how is that received? Do you know what I mean?
You know what's interesting is that I'm so grateful that social media was not born.
Exactly.
At that time. So I have no idea, you know, what people really, really thought, because you couldn't get the temperature of what's happening in the world like that, you know? So we just made music. We went out there and we performed. I'm so grateful for my foundation as a Mouseketeer.
Right.
Because that was natural, second nature to me to just hop in there, learn some choreography, learn the harmonies.
Not overthink
it. And let's go work.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was nothing. Not until later, when social media was born. When's that? Like 08, 07, whatever. Mm-hmm. Did you start to finally get maybe someone's opinion through a chat board? You know, because even Facebook wasn't that popular yet, or Twitter hadn't even been born. You might see like little groups popping up online, and you'd see their fan groups start popping up and people talking about what they've been seeing over the years. But then even still, you weren't paying attention like that. It wasn't, you know, who was online like that back in the day. You just weren't. So I just never, sorry about that. So I just never, never really knew. Not until now.
It's so interesting. So I'm just curious about like the original En Vogue. Are they all still kind of involved, or did some people just flat out leave and they brought in, or is it interchangeable?
Not interchangeable. Dawn has left since 97 a few times. So she's been the one that's most, you know.
There's a story, huh?
And then Maxine is no longer with
the
group
either. We got to get her
on.
No.
Give me Dawn.
Okay.
So do they, so you're under contract with them. Is that how it works?
Yeah, we're working, yeah.
And so how many albums since you've joined have they released?
We've only released one album. And ever since then, we've just been, you know, I've been off and on with the group for 14 years. So, you know, I've came in, then the original members come back, you know, and then come back, and then the original members try again, and then now I've been back. And
so like, let's say like the Grammys called and they're doing a whole retrospective of 90s, whatever, and they want En Vogue to perform. Do the original members come back or do you do it?
I have no idea. I mean, who knows? We'll find out.
Right. I mean, like, how does that work? Like, I mean, like, are you a full-fledged? That's why I'm confused. Like, I get what you're saying, but like, it sounds so interchangeable. I'm like, well, how does that work?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I mean, at the end of the day, no one's going to take away from the legacy of the original members of this group, period.
Of course.
So, you know, I don't think nobody's ever closed the door on that possibility happening again.
But they say something like, hey, we want to go do this like 10-week tour in Europe. And, you know, I'm sure there's somebody that's like, yeah, no. And I mean, probably.
Well, that's a lot.
It's a lot. But they know that you are amazing and professional, and they love working with you, and that's why you're there.
What part of the song, like, are you, what are you singing in this? Like, what are you?
I sing. The only thing I don't sing or haven't sung in this group is Terry's parts, because Terry's always been there.
Okay,
but I've done Cindy's parts and Dawn's.
So you have to learn multiple and sort of change it up when
needed. Sure.
Oh my God.
That is. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
And but how often do you guys rehearse?
We don't anymore. We don't have to. I mean, well, if we're going to spruce something up in the show, of course. We'll get back.
Or something?
Yeah, we'll come in and rehearse. If we're going to do a television appearance, yes. You know, we'll come in and tighten it up. If we're going to prepare for another tour, sure, we'll go back and tighten it up. We'll work with the band if we're going to add some more material. But for the most part, the foundation is there.
Mm-hmm.
And like for the rehearsals or whatever, like, so when you learned everything, because there's movement involved.
Yeah.
There's, do you know what I mean? Like, you don't just, how are you learning this if you're not really?
Oh, but in the beginning,
I definitely did
a lot of rehearsal.
You know
but
what I mean?
By yourself or with them?
No, with the group.
Okay.
Yeah, we've rehearsed a lot over the years. It's just that we don't need to as much anymore because it's automatic pilot.
Yeah.
14 years it should be, I guess.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So what do you feel, how do you feel about being in a group?
I love it.
Right?
It's good. You know, I didn't know that I would like it so much, but you know what I mean? You get to share the spotlight. You don't have to always be out in the front. There's something about being able to work off the energy on stage. I mean, I like both experiences.
Of course.
I've gotten a lot out of being a solo artist, and I've gotten a lot out of being in a group.
Biggest arena you guys played?
Probably most recent, actually. We just did the Cincinnati Music Festival, and that was at the Bengals Stadium.
Oh, fun.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty big.
Yeah.
So now you're about to go to Australia.
Yes.
And tour around Australia.
Yeah.
That's gonna be amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, mate.
What's your favorite? what's the worst country that you've been to? Come on.
Well, maybe just worst experience in a country.
She could say North Korea. It's safe.
You could say that, Rona. I almost don't want to say. Well, I don't know.
Oh, Rona, for Christ's sake. Mama, tell us your worst country ever. With Jesus.
Let the cats in.
I'll just say I've been to a country where I saw slums.
Well, who hasn't?
No, that's not a who hasn't, because people will think, oh, you've been to the ghetto and that's like really bad. And it's not to say everything's relative.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so it is bad. But when I saw the slums, when I saw ruins that people lived in,
mm-hmm.
when I saw shacks on shacks on shacks on water on shacks, when I saw worn ceilings and dirty, filthy walls and people walking down the middle of the freeways with like everything and a goat. I mean, just like crazy looking. And I was just like, wow, what a totally different.
Yeah.
Well, that could be anywhere.
Life experience.
No. I've seen it in South Africa. I've seen it in Mexico City.
That for me, and it was just, the biggest culture shock. And then it was just uncomfortable. It was just different. And it totally broadened my scope about, you know.
How about dating? What's the worst date? I know you have some funny date stories.
I don't date.
Girl,
a lot. This is.
Are you on the Tinder?
I don't date a lot. No, I'm not on Tinder.
Okay.
Are you in a relationship now?
No, I'm not, and I haven't been in a very long time.
It's okay. Go ahead.
I think people think that, you know, because I move around so much that I must have all of these, like, the smorgasbord of men.
Oh, I bet.
But we're really in and out. I'm like, we're in, and then on the first thing, smoking out of there. And then I'm at home, and I'm studying to be, you know, to strengthen myself as an entrepreneur. Like, I'm just working.
Yeah.
And you're now doing a podcast, right?
I am, Music Wise Podcast.
Tell us about that.
That is your music industry mentor. I have a partner that is overseas. Her name is Bindu Duknuk. She lives in Amsterdam.
Bindu Duknuk.
Duknuk. And she and I, she is an IP lawyer for entertainment, music, whatever, and also a musician. And so we decided to pool our talents and skills together because we're both very passionate about the industry and just have a well-rounded approach to success in music.
Wow.
So wait, what the podcast, do you answer questions? Do you, mm-hmm. so it's like, it's like email based, and then
it's email based. Right now, we've kind of turned it into minisodes because it seems like the mini episodes are power packed. You know, we say what we need to say, and we get out of there,
right.
And we talk about every aspect that we can of from the psychology of being it, of the coaching aspect, because you know I'm a life coach, a personal power life coach.
Personal power life coach. That's not the name of the show.
Nope.
That's on tour. You're a personal power life coach.
Yes, I am.
She's listen, this girl, I'm going to explain something to you right now. She's way too positive for my, like, she's...
like, I'm totally uncomfortable. I don't normally even talk about a lot of this stuff here, so this is really hilarious.
No, it's good because I told you, I go, just let us lead, don't worry.
Yeah.
It'll come out.
That's great. What
I want to know, but there's a reason. You don't just become a personal power life coach.
That's right.
Did this come from the doing the podcast, or did that come first?
This came way before that. Before I ended up leaving En Vogue the second time, I remember I had said, you know, I wouldn't mind being a life coach. Sorry. I wouldn't mind being a life coach. I already had kind of a knack for giving advice to family members, friends, strangers. This is what they, you know, what people would tell me that would come to me just for whatever life guidance or whatever. And it was something that I enjoyed doing. It was something I naturally did. But I never put structure behind it. Not until I hit a proverbial wall in my career did I take it seriously, meaning opportunity was just not budging for me. There was a point in time where I was like, oh my God, am I changing my career entirely?
Mm-hmm.
Am I not going to be a singer anymore? Mm-hmm. Am I not going to be an actress anymore? Like I didn't know. And I hit one of my worst financial struggles at that time. I had to get my first job 9 to 5.
What'd you do?
Thank goodness I had a buddy of mine who was an entrepreneur and was in a field of alternative medicine. So it resonated with something I was already interested in. I was like, you know, I want to do something to make my ends meet over here.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, come on over. It started out part-time. And at the time, because I knew that I needed to take responsibility for where I was in my life,
yeah.
I was like... I went to me first and I said, Rona, what choices have you made up to this point that have you looking at this drought right now? And so I started to do the work on myself personally. And I remember treating it like going off to university. I was like, I'm about to be in college for like 4 years. I just became a hermit. Like I just went into a cocoon and I studied my face off for hours a day. I put together my own coaching program at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I went and started working with him. I wrote my first book. I started writing books
Is it published?
I have like five mini books.
Oh, wow.
That I've published. And all of these came from real moments in my life. So the first one was Got Motivation, How to Stay Motivated, because at that time in my life, I was definitely looking for motivation to keep moving, and I had to find out what I was doing. And so I shared with people in my first little mini book, you know, what I had to do to stay on track. The next book was Find and Pursue Your Passion, Even with a Regular Job, because at that time, I was working
that's
a regular job,
yeah.
And I was helping people to stay connected to their passion. I was moonlighting with still being a singer. I was like, I gotta have an outlet for what I came here to do on this planet, even though I gotta, you know, make new choice. And I refused to be unhappy. So I was like, I gotta figure out what I'm doing.
Yep.
The next book was How to Discover, No. Eating healthier for less. Because while I was, hello.
Yeah, well, yeah.
While I was working at this company, I worked in every aspect of it, from product creation to customer service to shipping to, you know,
so
everything.
So you learned all about.
So I learned this stuff. Uh-huh. People would call
she
and be like.
I learned it.
And people would want to know. They were like, well, I want to eat healthier, but it's too expensive. It was right. always that. And so I said, you know what? This is a void. This is a mm-hmm. something people need. So I wrote that book. I did all the research for that. It's one of my books I'm very proud of. The next book was Beyond a Wish, How to Discover the Champion Within. And that was me really at a powered up space, you know, in my life. I shared stories from all of the disciplines you're talking about, you know, and how that could help other people. And then my last book was Beyond the Fear, Real Inspirational Stories of People Dealing with Adversity and Illness. And I shared my story of, you know, having this diagnosis of a melanoma cancerous mole and what that was like and psychologically,
I didn't know that.
I know. My dad, I was going to interview him. He had mesothelioma lung cancer, but before I could get to our interview, he passed.
Oh,
so I ended up writing his section, but I'm so proud of his section of the mm-hmm. book. I also interviewed maybe five other people dealing with different forms of cancer.
You could have interviewed me.
Did you?
You knew that.
No.
I had testicular cancer.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
See, so we're learning things about each other.
He has a bionic ball now.
I have a prosthetic testicle.
Do you?
I call it my bionic ball.
I love it. I love it.
Honey,
can I touch
it? Black eye. You can touch it. I let people touch
it
all the time.
Is it hard?
It's hard.
All the time.
Here. Okay, I'm touching his bionic ball, people.
Wait, can I get this on Instagram? What's happening?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And then the other one's like really soft?
The other one's regular.
Very nice.
Thanks.
I missed it.
Okay.
Couldn't. Steven is, his face
We've
is
We've known each other
so
since
red.
We were kids.
It's in like... his book right now. Can't even
I
watch.
Just touched a bionic ball.
Yeah, so yeah, it feels like literally... It's a foreign object in my body, right? But it isn't, you know.
But now you're totally comfortable and used to it.
He's not that happy. He honestly.
I regret getting it.
Because he
really?
Said it would
Why?
Soften.
Because they told me it would soften up within years. Well,
but if you didn't get it, what would you do with
just,
it?
It would just be empty
sack.
It'll look mm-hmm. normal. It won't look saggy. Yeah, no.
But now it's like a larger ball.
It's the same size because what they do is right before you go into surgery, they go. We are so digressing. Steven's like laughing his ass, and you probably are too, audience. But this is the truth. This is real. Men from 15 to 35, you should check your testicles. I'm just telling
really?
You.
Really? Why? Why?
That's the age range that usually happens.
If you feel
but
a lump
what happens?
In there.
Oh, a lump.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
I found a little lump. And I'll tell you the story off air because I've done this. Yeah. Yeah, I've done this story already.
Okay.
So, anyways, but right before surgery, the doctor goes, "So, do you want the prosthetic?" And my first question was, "Well, does insurance cover it?" They're like, "Yeah," and I'm like, "Okay, then throw it in." Literally,
right.
This is a conversation. This is like right before I'm about to go under. He goes, "What size do you want?" And I go. I'd like it to match.
Right. Hello.
We're not like, upgrading
like,
one ball.
I'm like,
I want it to be cute.
I go, whatever the size I have, that's what I, you know, already.
Right.
I go, I don't want it. Yeah. He's like, okay, just checking. So when I got it, I was like, it literally felt like a rubber ball that you could throw against the wall. You know, like those kids' balls, you know.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, oh,
and
my
so
God.
So you have a rubber.
I've had it for 11 years.
Oh, awesome. Look at that, 11. There's my number. See, we're on point today.
Mm-hmm. I'm an 11-year survivor.
My signal. I love it.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. That was.
No, that I don't know even where we were. Now I'm
you were
totally
talking about
off
where do you find these books?
Yeah, where do you
first
find these books?
RonaBennett.com.
Awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you, I want real quick, just because you said something. You said when I left En Vogue for the second time.
Yeah.
Then you started going through the struggle, which is interesting. Why did you leave En Vogue then?
I didn't necessarily leave them. That's probably not the best way to say it, but they came back together. As original members wanting to give it another go.
Got it.
Yeah. And so, of course, naturally, I would go and do my thing.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was just like.
But I wasn't prepared.
Right.
I had already been there for maybe 5 years.
Right.
I didn't know that this was so it was like, oh, I'm doing something different.
Yeah.
And
I got to switch gears.
And by surprise.
Yeah.
By the way, we're back to Evie Original. You're Evie 2.
Messed up, yeah.
So apparently everyone's replaceable. That's one of the lessons we've learned.
Truth.
I think that you know what it teaches you too, or it teaches, I like to speak, let me speak in present tense. Diversify, folks. You know, especially in our business. Don't throw all your eggs in one basket, just period. Right. In general, whether you're in our business or not, but especially in our business, which I think is a very risky business. You know what I mean? It's good to have other things of interest that you can do.
Absolutely.
Yes. Period. And I really didn't take that seriously until that second time around. So even though it was one of the most difficult times I dealt with in my life, it was probably the most
rewarding.
Empowering and rewarding.
Look what came out of that.
Yeah,
five books, a totally different career, a lot of lessons learned, and probably a lot of introspection.
Yes,
during that
absolutely.
Time. That
you're still-
now you're getting ready to go to Australia and sing and do what you're probably meant God put you on this earth to do.
I'd
but
like to
there's
think
a
so.
Different like mentality.
She's gonna. I'm gonna predict this. Rona is. You're gonna get back into acting more. I think.
Yeah. Probably.
I think. You need to take some of your advice and get back into like and push it like really. Like,
yeah.
You have to make that happen for yourself,
right.
Which you will. And once she does, I'm telling you, she's so talented as an actor. Once
Thank
she
you.
Does, it's just gonna fly. I just know that. I already know. So I'm not worried about her in that sense. I am so happy you're doing En Vogue because it's iconic, and you know, plus she can give me some damn tickets.
Hey,
I think about it.
I mean, I saw. What was the theater in New York? It was on 42nd Street.
It was BB King's.
Yeah, BB King's.
Oh, yeah.
It was so fun.
Yeah,
I went backstage.
It's good
met
to see
them,
you.
And it was. You have to send me some pictures of you guys together and stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you have any Mouse Club pictures?
Yeah, I do.
Do you have any pictures of us?
Find probably
them.
Somewhere okay, in the archives.
Those. Check our social. We'll put them up
right,
on our social.
Where do we find Miss Bennett?
You can find me at ronabennett.com, RHONABENNETT. There you can also check out my online university, Personal Power University.
Okay. Where,
yeah,
you got your own school?
I do.
Okay.
I do. So that's what I'm saying. All these wonderful things have come from my adversity.
Yeah.
Okay, you offer scholarships?
I do.
Okay.
Actually. We know a lot won't be there.
Okay, where else?
You can pick up the books from the online shopping store, Shop Operation 11.
Okay,
you can get my t-shirts.
11.
You see mine? My Awesome is Contagious.
Okay,
I love it.
Okay, look, she's got a brand.
Isn't yours?
It.
You know?
Okay.
And Occupy Eardrums is there as well. I've been moving. I'm an entrepreneur as well now.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And what else? The podcast?
The podcast, Music Wise Podcast, is also featured there.
And that's Wise, WISE.
Yes, Music
that's
Wise
That's really podcast. Great because I feel like there's so many people who want to get into the music business. And I've even been asked stuff and I said, hey, listen, I don't know anything about it. It feels like a backwards business to me. I have nothing to say.
Where can you hear that?
But I think that is awesome.
I usually, thank you.
Advice.
Thank you. We have a SoundCloud.
Okay.
You know, so for that, but we're actually in the process of rebooting. We're getting ready to write a book together.
Good. Good.
This was the whole purpose. We even launched the podcast was to fill a void.
Got it.
So, this is a very, and we're getting, I just booked my ticket to fly to Amsterdam because we're going to go to Florence, Italy to write.
Oh,
nice.
Just
wow.
to go write.
Awesome.
So that I'm just so excited about that.
Okay.
That's going to be
Look for Rona in Florence.
No.
Look for Rona in Florence.
It'll be like, where's Waldo? look for the braids. Dirty Debbie!
Daddy.
Wait a minute. Okay, and then your social, your Instagram.
I probably should get a little bit more congruent here, but on Instagram, it's official Miss R&B. So the Miss is MISSR, the letter N and B. On Twitter, it's just Miss R&B.
Okay.
So official Miss R&B and Miss R&B. Either one of those, you can find me on my social media.
Oh my God, Brenna, I'm so happy you came in.
Thank
me
you
too.
For having me, man.
This was fascinating.
I know. I learned a lot that I didn't know.
I don't know what this conversation's going to sound like at the end of the day.
It's good.
Oh,
trust
don't,
me. We
don't
know.
Worry. It's great. Because like you are the least likely candidate to have a bad experience because you are so positive.
Yeah. Oh, well,
you know.
But it comes out of that stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, it all does.
That's why this whole thing, that's what Worst Ever is about.
Yeah.
It's humanizing your worst ever. It's not about making, it's making fun of it in the sense of like, we can laugh at it. We can laugh at it now in hindsight because something positive came out of it. Because celebrities, I mean, everyone has a worst ever story.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
So the point of this is to make you more relatable to your fan base because they're like, oh, that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of fans think that celebrities just come up.
Right.
You
know, or they have charmed lives or blessed existences.
Like, they don't get that. They've had to have worst auditions.
Oh,
they've
ups and downs in their careers.
They've had to have worst dates. They've had to have humiliating experiences.
Absolutely.
And it just makes you more relatable and more endearing.
And if nothing else, maybe you've got a worst story and someone's like, oh, shit, my life's pretty good.
Right. I know.
Hear that one? You hear episode 13? Shit.
So that's what this is about. Don't let the title fool you, girl.
Oh, my goodness.
So you're like, positive after all.
It ain't
you better stop hating on me.
It ain't like the show... Get your worst Jesus ever.
Let the cats out. All right. I'm Christine Lakin. You can find me on social at Yo Lakin.
And I'm Ala Khaled. And you can find me at Alec Led. Don't ask. We already talked about it.
Still doesn't make sense. And
You can always find me at Stephen Ray Morris. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephen.
Never gonna touched get a bionic ball.
Never gonna get it.
I touched a bionic ball in my hand.
You can find us at Worst Ever Podcast at Worst Ever Podcast and Worst Ever PC. As always, thank you to Steven. Thank you to Rona.
Thank you for having me.
Email us at worsteverpodcast@gmail.com. Bye.